Welcome everybody to TechEd. I am super excited in the traditional Microsoft way to have you all here to kick off the Windows Apps development track. And we're talking about Windows Apps in regards to mainly Windows 8 this week, but also a little bit of Windows Phone. So Windows Phone is, we're in between announcements, so that's why we're not seeing a lot of Windows Phone here at this event. But don't worry, Keith's going to show you some stuff on Friday and give you a sneak peek of the upcoming Windows Phone pieces as well. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to kick off this track by talking about the Windows UI design. And the reason why I think it's important to see that first is once you understand the design that goes behind these apps, when you come to build your first apps and actually create the experiences on the store, as a developer, you're able to, by understanding the rules, by understanding the opportunities that there are with the design language, you can then apply those to create awesome apps that fit on the platform and look really nice and are natural and easy for the users to use. So what I wanted to do was start with a passion of mine. I'm a very keen snowboarder, although with TechEd at this time of year, I don't get to do it as much as I would like. I get tied around here instead of being out on the snow. But one of the things I like about snowboarding is that when you're up on the mountain and you're in a place by yourself, you're really focused. That for me, it's like when I'm running, when I'm snowboarding, when I've got my headphones on and I'm cutting code, it's about being focused and being focused on the thing that you are doing at that point in time. But very often when we're building applications, when we're interacting with others, we get a lot of distractions. And the distractions could be from the tweet notifications coming up that pull you away from what you're doing and tell you to go look at Twitter. Or it could be a toast that comes in, a message window, or just multiple screens that you've got open at one point in time, and you're monitoring across all of those different things. And I know men aren't traditionally very good at multitasking, but for some reason, technology men love multitasking, and they've just got everything going on, every blinker light and window, monitoring almost four or five things in real time. And what I refer to when we're talking about this is really around distractions. This is the TechFest party from last year. You notice all the Superman capes that we've got, the superhero party. So anyone who was there knows that it's very difficult to hold a conversation in an environment like that. There's a lot of loud music, there's a lot of drinking, a lot of food tables. But really it's a bunch of people in one place trying to get themselves heard and trying to communicate over the noise that's there, taking you away from the task or taking you away from the thing that you're focused on. So the key thing with Windows UI is the simple concept of focus. And it's about removing those distractions and coming back to a point where you're focused on the content or the task that is at hand. And when we're talking about focus, it's talking about narrowing in and really pointing out the thing that you want to draw the user to or interact with. I like this quote here. It's a book that I've read a few years ago. I haven't read it recently. Has anyone read The Power of Now? Who has? So true artists, whether they know it or not, create from a place of no mind and from inner stillness. It's a little bit spiritual, it's a little bit kind of out there, but when you think about that, that's just about removing distractions, taking things out of the way so that you can be really caught in the present and honing in on the thing that you're actually doing. And Windows 8 helps with that. So what we've done with Windows 8 is we've focused on a bunch of distraction-free patterns that users can rely on. Now, they will need to learn these. When you first put a user in front of Windows 8, it's not the same model, it's not the same approach that you have on previous versions of Windows. So we're purposefully breaking the user engagement model and we're changing it to reprogram users to understand a new model that's driven towards touch first, but is also working with mouse and keyboard. And by doing that, it's an intentional way of recreating the experience for interacting with content as opposed to the Chrome or the wrapping that goes around that content. So there's a few common ones, bringing up the app bar, top and bottom, bringing in charms from the side, which is really to get back to the main intro screen, and this concept of semantic zoom. And I'm going to break into these a little bit more as we go through. So when you look at the start menu and you look at this on Windows, this is the start experience for Windows 8. And you'll notice I can pinch zoom, I can navigate in. So I've got this area over here, which is my New Zealand apps. If I click in, I can navigate across those. And this is really that idea of those tile experience that I was looking at. And Windows 8, when you're building these apps, it's going to provide the tools to make the apps great. And your thoughtful design and you understanding these rules is going to help you actually do that. So what I'm going to spend the next period of the talk about is talk about the Microsoft design style and take you through five tenets that once you understand these tenets, you can really apply them into the apps that you're building. And the first one's pretty simple. It's do more with less. So we had a focus group where we sat down a bunch of everyday users of Windows before we started. This is about 4 years ago when we started to design Windows 8. And we put them in front of computers that were running Windows 7 at the time, and then we got them to go back and draw Windows. And when they drew Windows, this is what they drew. And when you look at this, you realize that this is all Chrome, this is all decoration around the content itself, or around the applications themselves. We've got the taskbar down the bottom with the start menu and then other apps pinned there which you could launch. We've got the traditional Windows box with the X to close, maximize, minimize, scroll bar up and down, file menu, view menu. And this is people's experience and understanding of Windows. And this is like the old kind of tree style design. When you think about a lot of original apps had a tree structure, and that was really navigation as you step down through it. And then that got imprinted onto websites and web structures, and you saw this tree navigation kind of thing. And that's kind of old world in regards to how people want to interact with content today. So what we did next is we then gave these same users a bunch of slates running Windows 8 with some apps installed and touch devices. And then we spent a little bit of time with those devices. And my kids are a great example of this. They'll just pick up one of these touch slates that are here, and they'll go and start downloading apps, find their games, and start playing with them. And it's really natural and obvious to somebody who doesn't have that pre-programming of how to use Windows before on how to use the new interface and the new design. And then after the period of the focus group and having the users with these devices, what happened next is we got them to draw Windows 8, and this is what they drew. And what you're looking at here is all content. There is no navigation, there is no launches, there's no Chrome around the apps themselves. This is the design language that's showing through from the apps that the users were actually interacting with. And an interesting story about that is Umesh, who's the product manager for the NZ Herald, he actually came up last night in the welcome drinks when we were talking with the MV Interactive guys, and he goes, your ESPN Crick Info app looks like you've taken the design from my Herald app. And what I found really funny about that was that it's because both those applications use the design language, and there's a familiarity across all apps that do. So therefore, people who don't understand this think it's their design or their app, and then they see it reflected in others, and they're like, well, you know, why are you doing that? And I think that's the common message that I'm trying to get across here. And then the underlying point is that Chrome distracts users from what the app is best at. So when you have this wayfinding navigation, what you're really doing is distracting. You're taking away from the focus of what you're actually working on inside of the app. So the next tenet that I wanted to talk about is this content before Chrome. And it's really broken down into three areas, which is layout, interaction, and navigation. And we start with layout. So this is Windows Live Hotmail, probably the last iteration. So this has already been through a number of iterations of how you would display a email client using a web page. And you notice up here, the traditional tree structure has been kind of dropped with this idea of quick views and drop arrows and then a list of titles underneath it. So it's still kind of like a tree structure, but it's changed a little bit in the sense that you can customize it and display the view. There's some boxes, some grids, some check boxes, some menus across the top. And this is an evolution of a really traditional Windows app design that's been taken to the web. It looks similar if you say something like Gmail. They all have this kind of style and layout. The first thing about layout is you can create quite a lot of visual clarity simply by removing the lines and boxes that organize your content. So if you take a look at what we've done with Outlook.com, in the simplest terms, we've actually removed some of those menus and boxes and grid lines, and it suddenly looks cleaner, and it's much more obvious to the user. It removes some of the distractions straight away by just removing those grid lines and those layout boxes. Take it a step further, this is the music app, so the Xbox Music app on Windows 8. The same approach, just removing and focusing on the content itself, taking away some of the boxes and grid structure that sits around that content. The great example of a RSS reader, this is a traditional kind of Windows app which runs RSS. There's the change, so you look at that, suddenly that's removing those boxes and those grid lines and focusing on a bold color across the top, and there's your layout changes straight away. Next one, about navigation. So think about navigation. The navigation should always be about where you are, not where you want to go. Because it wouldn't make sense if you're driving down the road and you were in Auckland, but there were signs saying Lower Hutt, Upper Hutt, Timaru, Ashburton. Because you're not near those places, so why do you need to know about the step after the step after the next step? And quite often as developers, what we're tempted to take every function of a software application or a web page or something we're building and stick it all there on the home page, or stick it all there on the page that the user is looking at, because they may just want to jump contextually over to another part of the application that's got nothing to do with where they are right now. So we're doing this avoiding the persistent wayfinding Chrome. And when you think about persistent wayfinding, it's often most represented as tabs, or as tabs inside of an application across the top or down the side. So you look at this, there's Contoso Travel, and there's our Chrome, and that's our wayfinding, featured, last minute deals, my trips. That's a good example of permanent wayfinding information. It's tempting also then to pick it up and just move it to the top. So we still have the wayfinding, we've just changed its location so it's not using as much visual impact on the screen. But the key with the UI design here is to integrate the navigational aspects into the content itself. And once users become familiar with this, they'll find it easy to navigate and to find the way around. So what we're doing with the UI design is we're working with the flow and going off the screen and enabling these gestures, which will then bring the content into view, bring the peaking of the content into view, but also take it out beyond the edge of the device or the area that's currently on the screen. So when you see it, it's there, and there's a hint to what's coming, but it's not drawing you into what's coming straight away. So you know there's more content, you can scroll with the mouse or you can swipe with your finger, and as you go off, you can navigate across. And the key thing here is not to put too much content, because this is like your hub or your top level page. So it's tempting as a developer, if you've got 400 or, you know, not 400 too much, but say 15 content points inside featured destinations, to blow that out, but then you miss the fact that there might be another piece of content just off to the right. And then the idea of the semantic zoom is really to enable navigation quickly. So this is the pinch zoom gesture, but it can also be done with the little zoom button in the bottom right that we see on the start, or the scroll wheel on the mouse. And that enables to take you out to see the top level navigation, to quickly go and to drop in. So if you saw on the PPI unit yesterday, that was great when you're on a really big screen, because to quickly pinch and navigate is a lot easier than stretching up towards the ceiling to get to that next thing you want to reach. So when we think about file new project, I'm gonna do a file new project now inside of Visual Studio. I knew I would get caught with that. Damn it. I didn't want to do that, but when you launch up Visual Studio and you go file new project. These are some of the grids and templates that get shipped for you out of the box. So I've chosen a JavaScript app here. You could choose other languages, C#, XAML, C++. And if I was to select a grid application here, and run that at. Sorry, my font's tiny because of the resolution I'm at. But what you'll see now is this layout of the group title, the different groups, and the expansion and the hinting as we go off the screen. If I swipe or navigate across, there's my navigation right to left. And if I break into a particular group, that's the information within that group there. And I bring this out and I dock that, it then readjusts based on the smaller screen or the smaller layout that we have. So that's the standard out of the box template that you're going to get when you go file new project, create a grid. There's a dark theme CSS, a light theme CSS, or XAML, and that will give you, you know, the basic intro into the structure. Sorry. There is, but because I was in full screen and there was nothing else running on my desktop, it didn't work. That's what I'll do next time. The other thing I wanted to mention was that the SDK, so inside the SDK, it's your best friend. If you go to dev.windows.com, there's a little sample for pretty much all of the things that I'm going to talk about. And I just wanted to show you one of those running now. So this one here is the little creating a grouped list or creating a semantic zoom. And if you look at this, this is the group list. So we can actually have a headline which is based on alphabetical order for those items that we've got there. And if I click into that and semantic zoom out, you'll notice that that is that next level of navigation that I was talking about. So if you click the M, it navigates into the list and into the area of the M. So by creating file new project, it gives you that grid and that layout, but it doesn't give you the things like the semantic zoom. So this SDK provides that code that can then be inserted in, and you've suddenly got a semantic zoom inside of your application. It's kind of a step one. You'll be amazed how much time I've spent with people who are just starting out, and they're going, how do you do this, how do you do that? And once they find these SDKs and these samples, it's a real help, and it really does get you from zero to 10 quite quickly. Now the next part is interaction. Now the interaction with the content, with the commands, goes into the content itself. And this is something that you become really used to when you start using Windows 8 for a while. It's when you have that aha moment and you're like, well, Windows 8, it just now feels like second nature. Some of these interactions, once you've learnt them and you start to apply them, you become very proficient and very quickly, like my kids, become experts at being able to do this sort of stuff. But as a app developer, you really need to understand them and apply them, because if you ignore them or don't use them, your app becomes harder to use, and it becomes more difficult to learn. So what we're talking about here is, I'm just going to backtrack a little bit. We've got our RSS reader, we've moved those grids in those areas, we've navigated into this area of food in the tree, and we've got the Pioneer Woman, Just Bento, Daily Meal, some of these other instruction areas here. So by breaking that out into this this navigation structure, we're now in headlines, and we have Pioneer Woman, Bento, Daily Meal, Summer Tomato, and then we take that the next step, which is to wrap that up into the groups, only show a few of the items, and there could be like a load more up here when we want to drop down into the grid itself. And then if you swipe across, that will then take you out and navigate across the content. So it's a very quick change to get from that beginning into this stage here. The next thing is contextual instructions, or how to actually enable something to happen based on the content itself. And that's where the app bar comes in. So right clicking with the mouse or swiping from the bottom or the top will bring up the app bar inside of your app. And anything with global kind of comes down here on the bottom right. So add feeds, remove all, refresh, those are all global commands in relation to what's on the screen, and they're bottom right context. Top is navigation and left is contextual, or based on what's currently selected. And then over here is the charms that I was talking about before. So the settings, devices, it takes a while for people to learn these ones, but once they know that they can search within the app, they can share from within the app, they can adjust these settings, or they can go to an external device, whether it's a printer or some other aspect from within the app, once they learn the charms, they also become second nature quite quickly. This is the new Internet Explorer for Windows 8, and it also uses an app bar model. Down here is where you navigate to the different website, and over here at the top is where you actually, oh sorry, that's navigation. This is the web page address that you're in, the refresh, add to favorites, pin, those sort of approach. And up here, you're adding your tabs or closing your tabs as a form of navigation. So that same principle of navigation applies inside the first party apps that we're building as well. And I mentioned before to provide the commands contextually. It's really tempting sometimes to do this kind of replication. And sometimes it does work if people want to have quick fire approach to a particular item. But ideally, you want to be removing that instruction from each item. You want to provide the drag to select or the right click to select option on each item, and then have those commands in the app bar contextually. So on the left hand side, because they're related to what you've selected. And that way, that item is selected, or multiple items are selected, so we know we're operating against a single item or the items in the group. And that gives us the ability to, you know, favorite, to download, to do some of the things that we might want to do. Now, changing tact a little bit, this is where it becomes a little less natural if you're a developer, and a lot more exciting if you're a designer. Designers, let you in on a little secret, they've got rules as well. They learn a lot of things from their discipline in regards to how to make things aesthetically pleasing, how to make them lay out really nicely, and how to look really good. And by having a design language and understanding those things, you don't need to be a designer yourself. What you can actually do is understand those rules, start off on the ground floor at level one, and then apply it and become better and better at the art itself. So the first thing is typography. And with Windows 8, you're going to see a lot of white slides, bold text, different size fonts. And there's a lot of rules as to why we're choosing a specific font. The Sugui font is used throughout Windows. The Sugui Light is what I've got here on the slide. Sugui Black, Sugui Bold. And this is the Windows font. And this is the font that we're going to use for everything in relation to Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And the reason for this is it's got the direct recognition from people who see the TV ads right through to people interacting with the apps. It's a good rule to have. And it's not just the font, it's also the type ramp that we apply with that font as well. So we have the font, and then we have the sizes fonts. Now this is the one that a lot of people break. A lot of people are tempted to not use the Light once they get into really big. And I broke that rule in the keynote yesterday when I was providing the slides. I realized that when I was preparing for my talk that I'd broken this rule here. But the good thing about it is by knowing these and applying them well, your app will feel great and feel in place on the platform. And we have rules about what we use for different things too. So this is for page headers, this is for your subheaders, this is your body copy, and this is your tertiary information that you have within your app. So when you look at this applied in the default template for a file new project, there's your 42-point Sugui Light, there's your 20-point, there's your 11-point, and there's your 9-point. And this is a DPI scaling font, so when we go onto those big 82-inch screens, which is super high resolution, it's still proportionately correct and the tight ramp still applies. And it's a really simple kind of way to, simple rule to follow, and it's one that will then make a lot of difference when you ship your apps. Another way of looking at it is down here in regards to layout and positioning. And this is a question that we get a lot is, I want to be different, I want to be unique, can I use something other than Sugui? Well, the answer is you can, but you really have to think about why. So if you're doing it just because you want to use Comic Sans, all power to you. But it comes down to, do it with purpose and do it with reason. Obviously, if you've got a company font or a company logo, you might want to use that font to provide your logo or to do some personalization in that form. Sometimes reading apps, so if you're a newspaper or if you've got a specific kind of sans-serif font that you use, it is appropriate to use an alternative type ramp, and we do have one, which is Cambria, and that's really, you know, for the people who want that that font for a reading or an ebook reader. But think about it before you make those choices. Don't just jump into it because you know, you don't want to look the same, or you know, you feel that your font's better, or there's a font that you would prefer to use. Now, I'm just going to change tack a little bit. I'm a keen photographer, and I've never been formally trained in photography, but I've read a few tricks about how to take good photos. And if you're looking at this photo, who thinks this is a good photo? Quite a few people. Anyone would hazard a guess as to why this is a good photo? Tells a story, yeah. Leads your eye in. Yep. Pardon? Third. That's it. So you apply the grid, and what you'll see here is this photo is intentional based on the rule of thirds. And what I'm doing here is, when I'm framing this photo, I'm thinking about the screen as 9 blocks, and the eye is being drawn to particular segments of the screen. So anyone who takes photos, or who understands photography or works with photography, knows all about grids. And they know about grids in the design language, but they know about it in a different sense, because they're a little bit more advanced than what we're seeing with our Windows UI apps today. Because with the apps today, we're still showing the grid. Now, there isn't a reason to show the grid. The grid is there to bring things together and to make it feel natural. But the easiest approach at the beginning is to actually put those boxes in and show the grid itself. Try another one. So this is another photo that I've taken when I was in Hungary. And this is a more complex example of the same thing, because not only am I working in the rule of thirds, I'm also working across those thirds with proportion across different objects within the frame as well. Now, this is a kind of a shot by chance, because as those birds are flying in, I'm obviously taking 20, 30 photos in a very short period of milliseconds. But then it's very easy to pick the one that you want to keep, because the one you want to keep is the one that actually rules up with the rule of thirds and then applies the proportions or the distinctions between that. So if I go back one, you'll look at that and think, that's a good photo. I hope you think that that's a good photo. But then when you understand the rule behind it, you kind of realize a little bit more about why. I'm getting to that. So this is kind of the profound understanding piece that sits behind this, is that us as humans, we're actually hardwired to find certain proportions and spatial relationships more pleasing than others. And this is kind of like one of the eureka moments, you know, when you find out that the meaning of life is number 23. Or some of those kind of things where you go your whole life and you go, I know I like that, but I'm not kind of sure why. And that's the rule of thirds that I was introducing before. Again, this is another example. This is a shot that I've taken where I shot this photo and then I rotated it intentionally to line up with my rule of thirds. Now, this photo, when it was taken in its original form, this is the horizontal axis on the bottom of the photo, and it didn't look nearly as good as when I performed that rotation on it. Now, for the advanced people in the room, anyone know what this is? Quite a few. So the rule of thirds is a simplified version of 1 to 1.618 proportion. And this is related to the Fibonacci sequence and a number of magic numbers. In Greek it's known as phi, which provides a formula of how things happen in nature and how things are developed to be in perfect proportion and perfect alignment. What you might not know, the human body and all of the things that we see in plant life and nature adheres to this golden ratio. So if you took your foot and you place your foot on your hand, the distance from your heel to your toe is the same as the distance from the inside of your elbow to the bottom of your hand. And there's a lot of areas like that where the exact proportions align, and it's all related back to this particular golden ratio. And it's shown the most when we start to think about a koru or a fern as it's unwinding. This is a photo I took of an opening fern. And then when you apply the golden ratio and you apply it with proportion, you'll see it unrail on the screen. And what we're seeing here is this grid system with proportion laid out using the golden ratio. So you take away the fern design, you take away the elements of nature, you put content in there, and that's going to look good. And the user will, someone will look at that content, look at that proportion, and they'll feel like it's awesome, and they won't really know why. And that's kind of the, you know, that's the secret formula. It's the magic sauce that sits in there that tells a bit more of a story about why a grid and why size and proportion. So when we talk about a grid in the design language, it's really about alignment, removing visible lines, you know, content in negative space, and then using this proportion to convey the importance of the content itself that you see on the screen. So within the design language, we have a basic unit, and that unit for us is 20 pixels by 20 pixels. We've got a subunit, which is 5 pixels by 5 pixels, and we've got a column, which is 80 pixels wide. We apply that to our type ramp. So now you'll see that the type ramp and the font is aligned specifically with our grid system and our grid layout based on those proportional rules. So when we see that default template, we're seeing not only the type ramp and the size of the fonts, we're also seeing the layout of the content within that, within the correct column spacings and spacings between those particular items. And for anyone who's used to print design, we actually have a red line for the layout, proportion, and positioning of all of this content. And by being able to see that red line and read it and understand those grid rules, you're able to be quite creative within this, but still have an app that feels natural and feels like it fits on top of the platform. There's our page header there, which is 5 units from the top and the text lined on the baseline. The one on the left, 6 units out, 120 pixels. And when we take the apps, and these are the apps that have been built here and released in the store, you can actually overlay a grid on it. And when you overlay a grid, it can tell you whether it's aligning to the rules or the grid structure that we have. So there's New Zealand Herald, and there's our layout grid aligned on top of New Zealand Herald. And what you'll see there is it's honoring the lining, the proportion, and the scale. Good work, Nigel. Another one, ESPN Crick Info. Again, aligning the grid and the layout and the scale. Quitro, same thing. After your alert, you're intentional. He's intentional there, creative license. But same thing, the layout, the grid, and the scale. Sky App, layout, grid, and scale. So, coming in on the API. So they're working on that from the API side. But. And when you're working, like I built the Windows Phone app for the New Zealand Herald, and there's a great add-in from that from Jeff Wilcock, who actually provides the grid structure in debug mode inside of the IDE. So when you're creating the content, you can actually see the grid, and you can work against it, so you know that your alignment, I'm out a little bit there, but it's a great thing to apply over your apps, because then you can suddenly see, okay, well, is it proportioned, is it layout, is it the grid as I would expect? Now, the cool thing about tight ramps and grids is that it's nothing new. Anyone who's been involved in print design or working with magazine will understand that this has been around for a long, long time. And all of these magazines, every magazine cover that you see has a tight ramp, and it also has a grid. And when those get, when people get more advanced, when designers get more advanced, they can be a lot more creative within those rules. So instantly you look at this and you know it's Rolling Stone, but you don't kind of know why. And it's because of the tight ramp and the grid that sits behind it. Wired magazine, same thing, tight ramp, grid. They all look different, but it only takes you a second to identify the fact that they are the same, and that is the brand, which is the Wired magazine. And once you get a little bit more advanced, you can actually get a little bit more creative. So this is a good example. I quite like Cocktail Flow. It's a good example of an app, in my opinion, that adheres to the principles that we've got. And I haven't pinned it, so I'll just launch it from here. Oops. Didn't see myself doing that today. So this app here is a great example of an app that actually has taken some of these principles and applied them to give you the layout, the grid, and the type ramp, that is doing it in a way which feels like it's a little fresh, it's a little unique, and it's not necessarily the same as all of the other apps that you see on the store. There's some intention to design here that they've used inside of this particular app, but at the same time, it still has the layout, the grids, the proportion, and the type ramp. And if I was to do my semantic zoom by color, drop in, drop out, there's the nice subtle animations and the layout and the design, but at the same time, it's everything that I've been talking about previously. And we talk about proportion and size. This is where we're talking golden ratio, Fibonacci sequence, layout, and doing it for intent. It's not about all boxes the same size, but the first thing, you can change it around too. Like, it doesn't have to be uniform. It doesn't have to be big first one, small second, and so on. And I think as we build more of these apps, we're going to get a little bit better and a little bit more advanced at playing around with positioning and proportion. So having a look at how we do that, Xbox Music, they work with a little bit of a custom grid. They are still aligned to a particular grid, but they're not quite as uniformed as some of the other apps. And again, the SDK sample, if you want to go and have a look, list view item templating sample will show you how to create a binding template that spans multiple cells and provides different proportions. So looking at how that works, this one here, launch that one up, this is the last example here. So there's a binding template with some different proportion layouts that you can actually apply and data bind within your particular app. We're working on my own one. I'm not as advanced as some of the other examples, but I have done taken the feature and taken the top one there and just increased the proportion. So we see this quite a lot with the apps that are in the store, is the feature on the top left and then the fitting of the grid around it. Now the good thing about this is the controls will reflow. So you put this on a large screen or you put this on a portrait layout changing of, and they will flow accordingly and show more or show less depending on what you've actually got on the screen itself. So if you have a look at my one, my one's a good example in the sense that I just started with File New Project on the grid, and then I applied the Semantic Zoom SDK that we saw before, and I applied the proportion one that I showed you second. And I did that with a little bit of color highlighting. So this is actually quite a simple example where I've used the Semantic Zoom, the navigation, the scroll across, and then the breakdown. And I've had to apply a number of rules. So sometimes some of the sections don't have more than one item in them, in which case it didn't make sense to make a big version of it, just to use a little version when it was an orphan or stuck out by itself. If I was to open my app in here, if I open this one up in Blend, you'll notice that it uses the live services. So inside of Blend, I actually get the design area using those live services coming in. And if I turn on interactive mode, I can interact and see my animations fire. I can perform my my pinch zoom, can turn off my interaction, and then I could actually break down on a particular item and have a look at the CSS that's being applied on that particular point as well. So it's quite a nice tool for, even if you're not a designer, to actually look and see what's going on, to break in, and then it will show you what CSS is winning, and if you need to override it, how to override that particular property. So I'm not great with CSS, and I'm a lot stronger on C# and XAML, but I thought I'd write that app using HTML and CSS just to learn a little bit and understand the new tools. And I was quite pleasantly surprised at how much Blend helped me. Whereas somebody like Sam over here, who does CSS as his day job, he would just ignore that, and he would handcraft all of that, all of that design work. But for me, it was a nice tool. And then the next thing, so we're coming up to, I think this is number 4 in our tenants. It's about being fast and fluid. Now, this is overused. This is one of the buzzwords. If I'm saying fast and fluid, anyone's playing buzzword bingo, fast and fluid. This is overused by Microsoft when describing these Windows apps. But what it's really about is the animation, and that purposeful animation that creates the experience of movement. And it's not just having a blink tag for the sake of having a blink tag. It's actually having an animation that adds to the content or adds to the experience for the user. So when we think about that, that's exactly what I said. We have an animation library to get scenario-based animations into our apps. So this is another SDK sample, this time animation library. And if you have a look at this one, so drop in here, bring out this guy. There's a show page animation right there. There's a transition between pages animation, even in there. There's a show content animation. And so what you can do is you can understand what animations are there inside of the animation library and apply them in the way that they're supposed to be applied. And then your app will actually feel and work a little bit better than if you don't have them at all. Because it's, again, consistent use and consistent animations. Cool. And a note on panning. When you start to create these apps and you've got touch devices, it's really tempting to have a vertical area and a horizontal area together. I think the thing is, you can always pan full screen, but you should only pan full screen when you've got the focus of the entire screen itself. So this is not a really good thing to do, to have like all the SDK samples, they have those panning areas inside little boxes. That's a complete no-no if you actually came to do that inside your own app. The idea of panning is that you want to go end-to-end from all the edges. So if you're panning left to right, you're really on the full left edge to the full right edge, and vice versa. So there are some challenges in this, and some challenges as to how to solve this particular problem. And I know the guys at NV took a crack at it with Crick Info, and they're probably working on a little bit of redesign here as well. But off my internet. So if you have a look at a particular example here, there's a really nice bleed, a really nice subtle animation at the top. I'll try and find one which has got a scoreboard in it as well. So this one, maybe this one here. See that top left, that nice display and that nice text layout. But you notice here, there's a scorecard. Tap that, I'm now going vertical. Oops, close the app. But what I was talking about there is we were panning left to right. Panning left to right. And then it made sense for a scorecard to go the other way. So he's using the lightbox effect and the scroll to bring that panning and go end to end. Now the last tenant, this is number 5, authentically digital. What we try and do, and what we've done over the years, is we've gone to a point where whenever we invent a new technology or we make a leap forward in regards to some form of interface or design that we're doing, it's always tempting to actually phrase that in the language that we already know. So example for this is when we invented television, the first television shows that were made were two people sitting opposite each other on a chair talking into a microphone, because that was the premise that we had when we invented television, was the idea of a radio communication. So by adding pictures, we were just adding a picture to something that had come before. And I think what we try to do, or what often happens, is that we go and introduce these physical metaphors, or we introduce infographics and glimpse to try and make the digital world reflect the real world, or something that we understand within the real world. And we've done that for years, and it's common practice. But I think now's the time to stop doing that and to start embracing technology for what it's good for beyond what the world can actually do. So when we think about that, it's about creating a new reality which is actually better than the real world. Anyone remember this? There's a few hands going up showing age. So this is the first, or not the first, but it was a big redesign of Extra's website. When they, it's actually in correct proportion. This was the size of, I think it's 800 by, 640 by 480 resolution web page. So this is it on the same display today. And this was about the internet and mapping a village in a real world where you've got business and you've got a shopping mall, you've got lifestyle, you've got news, new users coming, just arriving on the trailer with a suitcase coming into the town. And this is a classic example of a real life, or mapping a real life, mapping a real life metaphor. So what we've tried to do with Windows 8 is we've tried to eliminate some of those real life associations. If you think about the photo app, the reason I think the photo app works is because it doesn't pretend to be something it's not. It actually enables you to connect quickly to all of the sources that you have on the internet. So I've got 5,000 photos on Flickr. Here I'm suddenly in Flickr feed. None of these photos are down on my machine. I can use my semantic zoom to go out a layer. I can then swipe to the right and quickly go between all the particular folders, and then apply that same principle to Facebook. So here I've got Facebook, and if I wanted to scroll out, you notice those are showing up in real time. I haven't actually launched this yet for Facebook, so these are now turning up as I navigate that. And so I very quickly could find a particular album that I've uploaded, say, to Facebook over the last few years. And if I drop into a particular folder within that, here's 58 files inside of that folder. I can swipe across them. These are appearing as I swipe. And again, if I zoom out, I can see them in a higher level view that fits out onto the screen. So it's a great way of actually quickly getting to a particular item or a particular piece of content. And then I'm able to download it and have it display on the screen, or you know, set as, print, share, all of those other things that I might like to do. So to me, this is about being authentically digital. It's not about pretending that I'm something else or somewhere else. I'm using the navigation principles, and I'm actually getting in there and designing it in a new way to add to the content. And then you can take these ideas and you can actually advance them and add more information within the navigation themselves. So think about semantic zoom, and then think about applying proportion to your semantic zoom to portray more information back to the user. So we could say, showing by popularity, there's a lot more stories. And this is kind of coming back to what Zhur was talking about in the keynote, about making the data more human and applying that aspect of humanization to the navigation or to the layout of the information itself. Same thing here, mutual funds, do a color coding or some form of information portrayal inside of your navigation system as well. And once you start to do this, people will find it very fluid and natural as to get to quickly to what they want, or to get a quick reading on the information that they're being presented. And Windows, you'll know we're moving away from this real world iconography where we're talking about a calendar or a notebook or you know, mail. And we're moving to these flat icons that quickly represent the context, but don't do that with the same kind of decoration that was there before them. And the last one, so this is the final principle that I've got, and I need to check my time and make sure that I'm good time, how about that? Is this idea of winners won. And this is really coming back to contracts and the constant UI. So this is where you leverage other apps to make your app better. So rather than reinventing the wheel and doing something time and time again within every app, you actually adhere to these principles of sharing or contracts. And then what you're able to do is you're able to take advantage of other apps that you don't even know exist. And that can be search, it can be these charms, or some of the commands that we see. So this is an example here of a share contract. And if I have a look at how that one would run, so I go into my photos, I go into my picture library, I zoom out, I have a look at some pictures, there's this picture here. And then if I bring up my charms on the right hand side and say, not search, I'm trying to do it with a touch screen, but my it's like a big trackpad because it's not with the black screen. Revert for now. And so I go share, and then if I choose this, these are the apps that I've got installed that are saying they know how to take a photo. So these are the three apps that I've got that actually say, give me a photo, I know what to do with it. So therefore I'm going to take Tweetro, and this will give me, I'm logged in two accounts, so there's my account here or the NemSDN account. I can switch between the accounts inside of this share view, and then I can say I can put a comment in there. Oh, you're interrupting me. Distraction. So I can say rule of thirds 10 and tweet that out. And so what I've done here is Tweetro doesn't know anything about the photo app, but what I've just done is taken that photo and I've tweeted it out using the Tweetro app, which wasn't launched. And to do that, it's about the contracts and the getting the access across it. So if I show you another example, search is another one. So I could search for Nokia Lumia, and I could search across Trade Me. So that'll show me ones and Nokia Lumias on Trade Me, and I can say lowest price or closing soon. That'll give me this match. And I can navigate across that, scroll through and see the items. And then if I wanted to do that same search, so I bring my charms back up. Oops, I went to share. Bring my charms back up. I could now search another app. So I want to search across I haven't got PriceBuy installed, but if I had Price, oh, there it is. I've moved it to the top because I was using it quite a lot. And now I'm actually searching across retail and finding the best price on a retail side. So again, what you're seeing there is that rule of contracts and applying those. So in summary, talking about Windows UI design, do more with less, content before Chrome and visual clarity, the pride and craftsmanship, that's where we're talking about the topography and the grid, the being fast and fluid, that's our navigation, purposeful flow and animation, authentically digital, going beyond the physical metaphors that we're seeing, information, infographics and blips. And winning as one, so that's the consistent UI and using contracts to share across the other apps that are there in the store. And if you look at this and understand this, it's really going to make for a better application that you create for yourself. Oh, sorry, I noticed just about to take the photo of the slide. These will, I'm going to put these online, and it's also going to get recorded as well, so you can get access to this afterwards. But I want to talk a little bit about related sessions too. So this is the first session of the track, and what I've done with this track is made sure that there's a lot of talks where the developers and the designers who have been working on the apps that are ready now are here to share their experiences and talk about and go a bit more deeper into the things that they've done, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and some tips and tricks. So these are the sessions I really wanted to call out. The Marca Metro guys are doing the beginner's guide to XAML and Windows 8 apps. The MetroTube, LazyWorm guys here, talking about from Lazy to Metro. So they're talking about the MetroTube app and the Tweetro app that they've built and their design process and how they've brought that together with development and design. From web to Windows, so this one is the Envy Interactive guys talking about how they've taken their web production studio and turned it into an app factory for creating Windows apps using HTML and CSS. Next one is from Datacom, from through their hackathon weekend, they sat down and built some apps over the weekend, and it was really around getting the stunning innovation apps out really quickly and how to do that in a team sort of rapid development environment. Interaction Continuum, this is really interesting. This is from the team at Fingertaps, who've got a couple of apps in the store, and they've been working for a number of years on natural user interface and working with Kinect and some other gestural based approaches to software interaction, and taken those skills and applied them to creating Windows apps using C++, but focused on touch and interaction and connection with devices. So I highly recommend having a look at that one as well. And then Keith's talk on Friday, which is Windows Phone, he's going to introduce and talk about some of the new aspects of Windows Phone that we've got coming. And as resources, design.windows.com, that's where you find our design language. You find all the documents in regards to the things that I've been talking about. They go into a great amount of detail on all the different sections of the design principles. And dev.windows.com, so that's the where you get the tools and the SDK and the areas that we've got there. And I think the key thing to mention is that now is the time to get started. As Jer was talking about, don't necessarily wait for your business plan, because we've got the RTM version of Windows out. The store is now open for company registrations, and we do have, there are other opportunities coming to enter into the store to be there early and to be there before general availability. And at the same time, you can sell your apps. So you can experiment with in-app purchasing, free apps to trial, upgrades and information like that, that will really get it out there. And I mean, the Twitro guys, their app is, 150,000 downloads already on pre-release. 110,000 downloads on pre-release. Which is pretty impressive considering, this platform's not launched yet. So I guess what I'm saying is this opportunity doesn't come around all the time. And when you have an entirely new platform and a massive user base, you can carve out a niche and do quite well just by focusing on a small thing that you're passionate about. So thank you very much, and I'll be available for questions. And we've also got some examples, and we're running some stuff up at the Windows 8 Dev Juice Bar, where after the sessions in this track, a lot of the speakers will go and hang out there, and you can meet and talk to people who have experience building Windows 8 apps. So thank you very much, and we'll call the session, and if you want to take some questions, we've got a little bit of time to do that as well. Thank you.